Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on News Talk.
But first, let's have a look at the main international business stories in the newspapers and websites as we start a new week. And we're joined, as always, by Russ Mould from AJ Bell. Morning to you, Russ.
Good morning to you, Shane.
Well, what a weekend. Saturday night, I said I was glued to Sky News, not your normal Saturday night, and obviously watching what Iran was doing and planning with Israel. There's the impact on the people in that region. There's also the impact on the geopolitical world and the international business world as well.
There is. I mean, it's the humanitarian issue that's the most important one. And I guess there, at least, you could say that, you know, I guess from an Israeli perspective, they'll be pleased in that. I think of the 300 missiles that the Iranians sent over, virtually none of them got through. And I believe that there've been no fatalities. And intriguingly, the United States, the EU, and the G7 have been pitching this over the weekend as to Israel as a victory for Israel, and that the damage suffered was very, very limited. And I think they're doing that, it seems, as an attempt to de-escalate the situation and try and take the heat out of it. Iran, from its perspective, has said it now views the matter as concluded. It's clearly, you know, retaliated for what it felt was an unprovoked attack on Iranian citizens in the Syria, in its embassy in Damascus in Syria. They've said, right, we've said our piece, that's enough now. What the world is now waiting for, clearly, is the Israeli response. On one hand, they have international pressure for calm. On the other hand, Benjamin Netanyahu's government, it's a coalition. It's reliant upon what you would probably call more hardline elements for its status as the leading party. And there will be pressure from there, I'm sure, for a fairly vigorous response. So I think the world is now waiting to see what the Israelis do. From the narrow perspective of financial markets, intriguingly, the oil price has not done anything at all. It stayed put at $90 a barrel. And I think that's probably in response to Iran saying, job done, and Washington, Frankfurt, and saying, okay, well, let's see if we can step back from this. So I think from the narrow perspective of financial markets, oil will be the big barometer here. Iran is the third biggest producer of oil within OPEC. And from all of our perspective, apart from the humanitarian angle, if oil prices did repeat what they did in the 1970s after an Arab-Israeli war of 1973 and the fall of the Shah of Iran when Ayatollah Khamenei took over in 1979, then the oil price spiked. That fed through to lots of inflation and a really, really big jump in interest rates. I guess from our all personal perspectives, apart from the humanitarian angle, that's the thing that we'll all be watching.
And words matter, and words like Joe Biden telling Benjamin Netanyahu, take the win here, that matters for all sorts of different reasons. Okay, moving on then internationally, it's been a good week for the dollar.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why is we had this very aggressive saber rattling from Iran all of last week. They kind of trailered the attack to a degree. And generally, financial markets, selfish things that they are, when the unexpected and terrible things start happening in the world, they look to the world's reserve currency as a safe haven, and that's the greenback. And the easiest way to measure that is an index known as the DXY index, or DXY. It's a basket of six global currencies, the pound, the euro, the yen, the Swiss franc, and the Chinese renminbi, and the dollar. And the bucks just had its best week in basically 2 years, partly because of geopolitical concerns and investors looking for somewhere to hide, and partly because the American economy is just doing much stronger than I think everybody expected, partly because President Biden's spending money like a drunken sailor in providing a lot of fiscal stimulus in the run-up to the presidential election in November. So American interest rates aren't coming down as quickly as financial markets thought. So you can stick your money in dollars in an American bank and get 5.5%. You do that in Europe, you get 4.5%. You do that in the UK, you get 5.25%. You do it in Japan, you get nothing. So that interest rate differential, that spread between the interest you can earn in dollars and the interest you can earn in other currencies, is staying higher than markets thought, and that's sucking money into dollars and away from other currencies.
Staying across the pond, there's a big meeting this week in Washington between the IMF and the World Bank.
Yeah, it happens twice a year, normally in Washington, D.C. I mean, in some ways, the International Monetary Fund has spilled the beans. Its head, Kristalina Georgieva of Bulgaria, she's been re-elected for a second 5-year term. And she said, she gave her sort of big economic headlines last week that she was worried that central banks had a big dilemma between keeping a lid on inflation and keeping interest rates tight, but not overdoing it and tipping the world into recession, and not cutting interest rates too quickly and letting inflation out of its box. And she coined a phrase, the tepid 20s, saying that she thinks that global economic growth could be subdued this decade. So I guess that will be one of the issues that the IMF and the World Bank will be talking about this week. From a financial markets point of view, it tends to be viewed as a bit of a talking shop and not particularly price sensitive, selfish things that they are.
They're not going to be glued to what they're talking about there.
No, I'm afraid not. Okay.
Not the only ones, I feel. Now, across the water in the UK, there has been a review of the Bank of England. Is this our good friend Ben Bernanke review? Is that one?
This is the former Federal Reserve, US Federal Reserve chairman and Nobel Prize winner for economics. And after the Bank of England, by its own admission now, I think made a mess of its forecast that inflation would be, quote, transitory and wouldn't stick around for very long, it called in Ben Bernanke to provide an independent review of how its models work, its forecasting works, how its policy is formulated. And he's frankly given the Bank of England a bit of a bashing. He's been very critical of its software, its hiring policy, underinvestment, its flawed models and processes. And some of his recommendations are that it should use a range of scenarios, not just one. But one thing he hasn't done is insist or recommend that they publish their own forecast as to where they think interest rates are going in the future, what's known as forward guidance in economic speak. But he has been pretty critical of them. I guess here I just go back to the English and British statistician George Box, who said that, you know, all models are wrong, some are useful. And I think, you know, we place a lot of emphasis on central bankers, but they're only human. They are going to get things wrong. The Bank of England hasn't been on its own here. And interestingly, Mr. Bernanke himself, his own Federal Reserve, didn't spot the financial crisis coming in 2007. So none of us are perfect, right?
Absolutely. JP Morgan stock fell on Friday. They had their results out.
Yeah, if you make $13.5 billion in a quarter, you probably think you're doing pretty well.
I would assume so, yes.
I would think, yeah, but the market didn't like it because they were more conservative for the rest of the year. Now, banks, the easiest way that they make money, they bring money in from depositors, pay one interest rate, lend the money out at a higher interest rate and trouser the difference. And that's banking in essence. And at the moment, the difference in the between the two is about 2 percentage points for JP Morgan. Now, savers aren't daft. They shop around for the best rate, and they're getting better at doing that. So that sort of profit margin that JP Morgan's making, the bank is saying its boss, Jamie Dimon, might start to shrink during the rest of the year. And that's what spooked investors, and the shares had one of their worst days for quite a long time.
Right. Okay. Just finally, that very normal, very reasonable family, the Berlusconis, they're back in the headlines again, talking about EU media consolidation.
Yeah, this isn't Silvio Berlusconi, the big name that we all know. Il Cavaliere is who's nicknamed in Italy, the Cavalier. He's now passed away. This is his son, Pier Silvio Berlusconi.
Is he any more reasonable?
He runs the family asset, so you suspect he's still a pretty ambitious fella. He runs a business called Media for Europe. It's got a big stake in a German broadcaster called ProSieben. And Pier Silvio is calling for consolidation between European media players because basically people like Apple, Paramount, Disney, better funded, putting out more content, sucking up all the subscription dollars, and he thinks that Europe needs bigger broadcasters to be able to compete more effectively. The Germans are saying, you're just trying to get one of our broadcasters on the cheap, so behave yourself.
Right, okay. Russ, thank you very much for talking me through all the international financial stories. That is Russ Moulds there from AJ Bell.
Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on News Talk.